Hi, friends, and welcome to All Things Relatable, a place where stories are shared. It's hard to put a value on a story because the lasting effects it can have are often priceless. An individual's story has the potential to impact our lives in tremendous ways. My hope for you in joining me today is that this episode resonates with you and that you leave enlightened, ignited, and inspired, because it only takes one moment to spark a change and leave an everlasting effect. My next guest, Cece San, has the most beautiful, grounded energy. I met Cece back in November at a retreat we both attended and was blessed to hear a little piece of her story. Cece is a mother of two littles, Eli and Izzy, and when her children were just 3 and 1, her husband Eugene tragically passed. Cece's world flipped upside down and was flooded with grief. And as time does, it keeps moving on. It doesn't stop to allow us to pick up all the broken pieces. Her children still needed their mother, and she wanted to create a world where her kids felt safe and loved. Cece still feels connected to Eugene, and when ladybugs come around, she knows that he's come to say hi. In her book, Eli and Izzy's Fire Department Alphabet Book, a little ladybug can be found through the pages. This is my favorite alphabet book I read to date. I purchased a copy for my granddaughter this Christmas, and before I wrapped it, I read it to my son. Not only did he love it, I did too. So I can't wait for you to meet Cece. Cece, I am so happy to be sitting across from you right now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
Okay, let's dive right in. So I would love for you to introduce us to your late husband, Eugene, and tell us all your favorite things about him so we can get to know kind of who he was and get a sense of him. So I think maybe the best place to start would be the story of you two meeting.
So I met him through a Bible study group. I was in one Bible study group. There are different satellites of Bible study groups throughout. And then we had one big retreat where all the different groups gathered, and that's where I met him. I remember him being very warm and inviting and welcoming. But as soon as we started to get to know each other, he was just moving further away from me. And so as we started dating, I lived in LA and he lived in San Diego. So we had a very long distance for a couple of years. But there was something very beautiful about that as well, because it kind of encouraged us to have those deep, meaningful, hard conversations and really just communicate over the phone. Sometimes I would take the train down or he would come up to visit, and it was very dramatic whenever he would take me to the train station. It's like I'm like looking at the window, like tears streaming down. And but it was really beautiful the way we got to know each other. But what's funny was that as we started to get to know each other, it was like, wait, how do you know so-and-so? And how do you know so-and-so? And it turned out that his uncle is best friends with my dad.
And I had
his cousin's wedding, and I never ran into him. And so we were like, okay, we need to keep this in the down low. Let's just figure each other out before we tell our parents. But we actually ran into his aunt and uncle at a restaurant. And his aunt was like, hey, Cece. And his uncle's like, hey, Eugene. And they were like, hold on, what is going on here? Like, okay, cat's out of the bag. We need to tell our parents, because we wanted to tell our parents, like we wanted our parents to find out from us, right? As opposed to from someone else. And so, little adventures like that started our relationship.
Oh my goodness. How long were you dating before the cat got out of the bag?
Ooh, I don't know. I want to guess. I don't know. That's a good question. I forgot. But I do remember my grandma came from Australia to visit with my aunt, and something happened where my grandma wasn't feeling well. And so they were supposed to go to the East Coast to travel, and my aunt went on her own. And then it was just me and my grandma. And my grandma and I, we were so close growing up. I mean, she and I, we used to play around the house, like march around like a marching band. Like, she was great. Like, she was the one who taught me where the best hiding places were. Like, she was fantastic. And so I'd be like, grandma, I have a boyfriend. And I'm telling her before I even tell my parents. She's like, oh, who is this guy? I want to meet him, right? And so I tell Eugene, and he's like, oh, okay, like I'll meet your grandma. She's like, no, right now. And so she and I, we drove down to San Diego, and Eugene took her out to the best places, to the beach, like everything. We had the time of our lives, and we're driving home, and she and I are like, okay, we need to get our story straight. Like, what are we going to tell your parents? And we got home, and my mom's like, where have you been? She's like, we've been out, just, you know, grocery shopping, whatever, running errands. She's like, dressed like that? Because my grandma was dressed pretty, like, you know, really nice. She's like, what's it to you? You know, she's like, don't be bothered by it. And she and I are like, shh. So it was our little secret for a little bit. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, so why was it such a secret to, or maybe the time passing for you to actually introduce Eugene to your family? Was this like something that was really sacred, or did you introduce different boyfriends growing up?
That's a good question. I had introduced boyfriends growing up to my parents. We were very open about that. If anything, my parents wanted to be involved. My mom used to make, like in high school, I had a high school boyfriend who would pick me up to go to school together, and she would wrap little like breakfast burritos for the two of us so we can go. It was very sweet. I think Eugene and I, we were being a little bit more mindful, because if anything happens between us, and if we were to break up or something happens, we didn't want to interfere with his uncle and my dad's relationship. So that's why we were a little bit more cautious about bringing it up to our parents.
Okay. And just quickly, you said your grandmother was visiting from Australia. So did she always live there, or did she move there in your childhood, or how did she end up there?
Yeah. So she lived in Korea initially. And then when I was maybe in elementary school, she moved to the States to stay with me. And then as I got older, maybe around high school, she moved to Australia because she has two sons there. And then, so it was like passing on grandma for the little kids. And so she was going to help raise my other cousins in Australia.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Very well traveled. So
yes, she was the one who actually encouraged me to travel. She and I went to Hawaii together. She came to visit me up in Berkeley, where I went to college. And when we went to San Francisco, she wanted to ride on the trolley. I'm like, great. But she's like, no, I'm not going to sit down. I'm going to hang on to the pole and just swing around while the trolley's moving. And I'm like, grandma, no, you need to sit. So she was very adventurous. I loved her so much.
Oh my gosh. I feel so connected to your grandma. I feel like I am her, like the wild and crazy and adventurous, and like make your own rules and break the rules and just be so playful and fun. And yeah, live out. I know the TV shows, I just remember seeing like people on the trolley standing up. I didn't know that that wasn't a thing, that you actually sit on the trolley. So
yeah, I mean, you can stand occasionally, but San Francisco has these steep hills. And I'm like, no, you're going to have to sit down for this. And once he started moving, she's like, oh, okay, I understand why now.
Yeah. Okay, so you and your husband, Eugene, you finally told your family. When did you actually make the move, one of you, to be together then?
It's kind of interesting, because that phrase, when you know, I never understood that. I think prior to Eugene, I was very hesitant about getting married. I always thought, oh my gosh, it's the end of my freedom, or just I had a lot of anxiety about marriage, and a lot of pressure from the other side. Whereas with Eugene, it felt like he just met me where I was, and I had moments where like, oh my gosh, I'm going to marry this guy. And I'm like, oh my gosh, why am I thinking this? This is crazy. There are little spurts of those kind of ideas in my mind. And I'm like, where is this even coming from? But it felt very much like I was at home with him. And I remember after he passed, I realized there's nobody who understood me the way he did. Like I felt so seen by him. Yeah. I remember we were going somewhere, and I don't even remember what I was upset or flustered about. And we were going through the parking lot, and he's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And he asked me again, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. In my mind, I'm like, it's nothing to be like bothered with right now. We'll deal with it after the event or whatever. And he stops me. He goes, whatever it is, everything else can wait. Like, you're my most important person, thing, whatever, you know, like, I'm here for you now. And then I think, like, I was getting teary and I mentioned what was bothering me. It was so minute. But like, he was just so present and he understood when I was feeling something and he was able to make space for me always and put me first. And so that was very just beautiful.
What a beautiful thing to have and share in a relationship where I get that somebody really, truly just gets you and all the nuances and all of the little things that you don't have to speak. They just get it and they know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, he got it and he knew, but then he actually paused and would make space for it. Because I think that's kind of where it goes, you know, the extra mile, just being there when you needed him to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a way of making me feel loved and seen. If we were at a party and it was with his friends, then he would make sure like I felt comfortable. If I ever wanted to leave, he's like, let me know. Or even if he's across the room, he'd give me like a wink or something to show me that like, I see you and I love you and I love that you're here with me. Yeah, he was wonderful.
So you had these ideas pop in your mind, like, ooh, I'm going to marry this guy. There's something about him that kept coming up. So when did you actually know or decide, or was it kind of a surprise? Well, I guess the proposal, what was that like?
I think I knew right off bat almost that I was going to marry this guy. And I was trying to process that because I'm like, how are you so sure? But you know, we took the relationship lightly, but also seriously, right? Cause we were having fun. But also with the intention of, we're not just gonna, you know, date and that would be the end of it. Right. We have the intention of, let's see where this goes. And hopefully marriage is where it leads to. And yeah, I think it was about like 3.5 years. But he ended up making his way back up to LA, finding a different job. And I didn't know this, but he visited my parents without telling me, so that he can ask for my hand in marriage. And then afterwards, he took me to Griffith Observatory and with the ring. And proposed there.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I love that. Like, your love story is just so beautiful, the way it all unfolded and him sneaking off to talk to your parents and get their approval.
Wow. Yeah. I have no idea.
Oh, I was going to say, were you shocked when he actually proposed, or were you kind of sensing that it was coming?
A little bit of both. You know, because I knew that we were headed that way. It's just, I didn't know he was going to ask me then. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he had already made plans with my parents either. So that was nice.
Okay. So then you get married. And how soon after do you have your little ones?
Okay. So this is where like a lot of friends were saying, oh, it's hard to get pregnant, or you should live your life first. And so we were just like, you know what? When it happens, it happens. Well, it happened 3 months after we got married.
Oh my goodness.
We were so surprised, but in a good way. And he was ecstatic, because he always wanted to be a dad. Like, he was just always so family oriented. And I was excited, and Elijah came, and it was wonderful. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Okay. So you had your little boy first, Elijah. And so how would you describe him as a father?
He was very loving. He was very loving to me. He did not want me to go to the gas station, even when I was pregnant, to fill up. He's like, I don't want you to smell that. I don't want our unborn baby to be exposed to that. And it's just an inconvenience. So he would just always fill up my car ahead of time. So he was always making those, you know, thinking ahead and making those steps to make my life easier and pave the way for our son as well. He was very playful with Elijah. It was really fun. It was, and for me, it was just beautiful to see that interaction between my husband and my son.
And where do you think he gets that from, thinking ahead and all of those, the little ways that he shows you that he loves you? Where does he get that from?
I don't know, because we're both Korean and a lot of Asian families are not very good at those type of skills. Like, expressive, you know, like expressing their love. And it's usually through, you know, did you eat? Okay, here's food, you know, like that's the extent of how they show love. But with Eugene, he was very warm. Yeah.
And did he grow up in Canada?
No, he grew up in the States as well.
Oh, Canada. I'm sorry. I'm thinking I'm Canada. I'm like, did he grow up in the States? Yes. Okay. So not in Korea.
No, he was born in the States. Yeah. Whereas I was born in Korea and moved when I was 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have talked to some other people who grew up in Korea, and the same was about expressing emotion and love and all of their feelings. They kind of were bottled up for so long and it wasn't invited. So that's so beautiful that he found that way to be that person for you.
Yeah, it's very interesting how he's able to be so present and be so loving and show moments of intimacy throughout the day.
Okay, so you had Elijah, and then I know your little ones are about 2 years apart.
Yes.
So then was it planned?
So we were thinking we're going to go to Australia to visit my grandma, because that's something Eugene and I, we wanted to do and bring Elijah. And we're like, okay, maybe we'll do it in a year or so. And then I got pregnant. So that got pushed back. And then, so yeah, Isabel was not planned either, but at the same time we were, again, when it happens, because so many people were struggling to get married. And I'm like, oh, I guess it's not as easy as when I was a kid, it's like, oh, you get married and you have kids and you have a family and maybe a dog, you know, like it was just very like innocent like that. But we were very fortunate that we did not postpone anything. We just let it happen in God's time. And I got pregnant because the first day back to work from maternity leave is when Eugene got diagnosed with cancer.
Oh my goodness.
And I remember it was like, what? and also because it was male breast cancer. I didn't even know that was a thing. So it was very rare to get male breast cancer, and even more rare that it's someone in their early 30s. And it was just so fast paced. So now I think, like, imagine if we had held out on getting pregnant and I would not have Isabel. That would be another tragedy in itself, you know, because Isabel looks so much like Eugene. And it's just so wonderful to still like have him in both of my kids, right? Like Eugene was very, I felt like he was very charismatic in the way he spoke. He was very funny. He can be very engaging in conversation. And that's how Elijah is, just naturally. Yeah, and like facial features, I feel like Isabel has more of daddy. But it's just, yeah, I can't imagine not having Isabel. Yeah.
Wow. That gave me like full body chills hearing that. So in the States, I think it's different than Canada. Do you go back from maternity leave at 3 months postpartum?
About 3 months. Yeah. It depends on your work situation and how quickly you want to return to work. But I think 3 months would be like a good mark to say on average. Yeah.
Okay. So, and how did the news come about? Like, was it just was there symptoms or signs, or was it just a regular check-in, or how?
Yeah. How so he had a little bump on his nipple and we're like, oh, that's odd. It's not like a pimple or forming underneath. Like, that's odd. And it was when Elijah and Eugene were kind of like playing around, and then Elijah happened to poke him on his chest. And then that's when Eugene's like, ow, that kind of hurt. And he's like, oh, that's weird. I have a little bump here. We're like, oh, we should get that checked out. Then we noticed that it was starting to grow. So we were like, is there like an ingrown hair? Like, I mean, we couldn't even imagine. We're like, is there like a pimple forming that you need to pop? That's really gross. But like, you know, like,
yeah.
And then it turned out that, oh, wow, that was cancer. Mm-hmm. So we went through the whole process of getting the mastectomy. He went through chemo, all of those things. Yeah.
Yeah, I have heard of male breast cancer, I guess maybe years ago, but not super common, something to hear about. And then I have never heard of, I know your little one, if you went back to work about 3 months later, and when she was one, he passed. So that is very short period of time. And I've never heard of somebody passing from male breast cancer. So initially, when he had got his diagnosis, did they know right away, like how far along it was, or did you have any of those answers?
It was a bit confusing because they said it was stage two and that's treatable. So we're like, great. We did the biopsy, we did mastectomy, we did all of it. And then they said, okay, we're going to do chemo to make sure, like, to get, like, flush it out of the body. So we did that. And then we were told, oh, you're cancer free. So I'm like, great. So we would have had like a pizza party with the nurses saying thank you for everything. And then they said, okay, the next step now is radiation to see if we should do that or not. And so they were mapping him for radiation. And that's when they're like, oh, it's spread all over your lungs and liver. We're like, what? So now you're stage four. And we were like, I don't understand. He just told us we're cancer free. And now we go from that to stage four. And so like we started looking, you know, we were starting to look for other treatments. Like, what do we need to do from now on? But the thing is, like, Eugene and I, we were never like, woe is me. It was like, okay, we got this. What do we need to do? We're going to do whatever we need to do to beat this. And I think that was one of, the biggest blessings when I look back, because after he passed, I didn't have any regrets of, oh, we should have done this, or I should have done more of this, right? And I was so grateful that, like, he and I, we really, really did the best we could. We didn't have any regrets about that. Yeah, because there's only so much we can do, right? But whatever we have the power to do, I feel like we really, really tried all of it.
And what was that like for your family, or as a family going through all of that? Was there any sense of like normalcy, or were you pretty focused on like the goal of this, let's do whatever we can and then carry on? Or did you kind of live in the moment along the way with your kiddos, because your kids were so young?
Yeah, I think we do. I mean, as a mom, we do whatever we can do, right? We're juggling our kids. We're still being part of the family, right? But we're being the caretaker. I was looking for different types of recipes that I needed to try. I mean, like, we were just, you know, it's like a circus, juggling, just doing whatever we can. And my parents helped out as best they can. So yeah.
And was there, did you get to a point like nearing the end where you kind of knew that there was nothing else that was going to prolong things or be able to help? Or was it kind of like a fight till the very end.
It was definitely a fight to the very end, and the end actually came a lot sooner than we anticipated. And even for the doctors too, they were like, oh wow, we really thought we had a little bit more time than that. Yeah. But what I have to be grateful for is that, like, it didn't prolong then his suffering or discomfort. Yeah. So it's a strange thing to say, but like, even though there was so much grief when he passed, there was just so much gratitude that I just noticed. I was just grateful for my family, grateful for the time. Like, there were just so many things I was grateful for. I'm like, what is wrong with you? But, you know, I'm glad that I felt that as opposed to just me focusing on all the negativity of it all.
And what did the grief look like for you?
I think the good and the bad is that with the kids, it almost put my grief on hold because I needed to be there for my kids. But at the same time, I remember holding my son, Elijah. He was 3 at the time, because he was always like a very bright and joyful kid. But there are times where he would just be angry, right? And rage out. I'm like, oh, this is not my son, right? And he would not step foot into the house. It's like, I'm not going inside. I'm like, oh, okay. And so sometimes I would just have to hand over my daughter to my parents and say, I'm going to take Elijah out, just the two of us. And he and I would go to the park, and I would chase him around the park and jungle gym, like right down the slide, everything, just to like hear him laugh and scream and get that energy out. Because he's not capable of vocalizing exactly what he's thinking. It's hard for even grown-ups to process. And so he was helping me, right, without him knowing, but I was just focused on him. In my mind, I'm like, I will be okay when my kids are okay. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, yeah, I was focused on that. And I remember at times, grief comes to you whether you want it or not. And I would start crying. And I was holding Elijah one day, and I was crying, telling him, Mommy will be there for you. I will do anything and everything with you. I will laugh with you. I will cry with you. I will poop with you. Whatever you want, Mommy will do everything with you. And I had tears streaming down. And I was just like, you know what? Let it be. Let me show him that it's okay to cry about things too. And so I was just like, you know, cradling him as if like I was trying to cradle my own inner child. Right. And just being there with him.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And things were put on hold for you. I get that when you're going through tragedy and grief, sometimes we go on autopilot and make it through just to make it through. And then when we stop or sit down or make the time, or when time has passed and we can actually sit with the grief and look at straight in the face, what was looking back at you? How did that kind of process look?
A friend of mine was saying that, you know, God and Eugene, like, they'll meet you at your level, right? So it's almost like, it's like you can even ask for signs, or, and I'm just like, I was not into signs or any of that before. And so I was like, okay. And I was like, well, Eugene, Sylvia, my friend said something about, like, you know, you couldn't even ask for ladybugs or like something. And that's when the ladybugs started coming. It was so strange. But it's like, I was sitting at my friend's house. I was holding a cushion, and there was a ladybug on the cushion. And I'm like, where did this come from? There's no doors, no windows open, and it's right there next to me. And then I was taking my kids to a baby shower, and it was the first one that I was going to on my own, and I'm pulling Isabel out of the car seat, and there's a I thought it was like a bee or something flying towards me. So I kind of duck, and it was a ladybug flying by, and only I could see that ladybug. Elijah at the park picked a flower for me, and he said, "Mommy, I brought this for you." I'm like, "Oh, thanks, buddy." And he'd run off, and then underneath that flower was a ladybug. I mean, on and on and on. I was like, in our house, we have a dresser with all of Daddy's photos, and the kids and I were just chit-chatting. We're like, "Oh, is that a spider at that corner?" I'm like, "Oh gosh, I don't want to deal with that." And it was walking towards the photos, and it was a ladybug. I'm like, "I don't understand what is going on here," but it was constant. And I'm like, "Okay, I hear you." Like maybe you had to like bang it over my head, like make it really obvious. But I'm like, "Oh, this is very interesting. Like I can't understand it. There's no logic behind it, but it's just something very beautiful and some sort of a connection that I didn't realize." And some people had told me, like, "You should maybe join a support group or something to help yourself." And I'm like, "What the heck is a support group? Like, I don't need to be in a room full of people who are just like whining and complaining about whatever it is that they're going through." Because I didn't know what a support group was, and that's what I imagined. Everyone just like complaining. But obviously, I wasn't ready for it then, right? And then as time passed, somebody reached out from City of Hope, which is where my husband ended up passing away. And they said that they're creating a support group, and they were inviting me to go. And I was like, should I not? And then I decided, okay, let's give it a try. It was fantastic, right? It was not what I had imagined. It was such a way of connecting with other people who experienced loss, and having that space to share and process. And the first day I was driving there, I was like, "Oh, is this a good idea or not?" And the freeway, something happened, so there was a detour, so I had to like take the back way. And I'm like, "Okay, Eugene, you know what? I'm doing this, and I'm kind of freaking out, and I don't know if this is the right thing for me or not, but I'm gonna give it a try." And then I turn the corner, and there's a flag with a giant ladybug on it, and I was like, "Oh, okay, so maybe it's worth a try," right? So it almost felt like he was kind of guiding me and reminding me that there's more life to live, right? That there's magic and whimsical energy everywhere around me if I'm only willing to be open to it, right? And that's how I ended up, like, when I didn't even consider writing a book or anything like that, but and that just kind of happened to fall into place. And I was like, "I need to put a ladybug on each page." And I named it Pixie because it seemed whimsical and magical. And I wanted everyone to have a pixie of their own to remind the kids and their moms, actually, that there's whimsical energy everywhere, and that we should, live our lives with a little bit of magic every day.
Isn't that just the most magical, heartwarming story? Those little ladybugs, those signs that, I mean, they were pretty insistent. It was like, okay, Cece, you better see me. You better take note. I'm not going away. I'm going to find you at the most unsuspecting times. Like, I'm going to keep showing up until you take note. And yeah, even on the freeway, taking the wrong way and seeing that ladybug, it's like you could either coincidence or like just no, that is my sign. That is my love reminding me of life and wherever it is that you need the sign. So, have there been other moments in your life since where you've needed a sign, or you're just unsure or wavering or not settled, where you're like, I just need something? What's the sign where they have arrived for you in a time of leading the path forward?
I definitely feel like the ladybugs were more frequent a while ago. I still notice it now, but I think that's just a reminder to me that I need to slow down, right, and stay present, because I have a tendency to do the responsible thing, right, and be productive and do all those things. And then the leftover time is time for me. And it's like, that's very scarce. Right. So I do still see those ladybugs every now and then. I remember there was a day where I was just feeling, you know, sometimes you just have those days where you're just like, oh, this is just not a good day. And I'm like on the verge of tears or something. And then a friend of mine, Amy Tangerine, actually, she sent me a picture of Jack saying, oh, a ladybug fell on Jack, and we took a picture, and we're sending it to you. And I'm like, that was just the perfect morning to have received that. And then that same day, my friend was like, oh, here's a little ladybug picture of my nephew. And I'm like, I haven't seen a ladybug in I don't know how long. And the day that I really, really needed it, like, I get two text messages with those ladybugs. So it's like, oh, okay. It's not like we're completely detached from each other.
And knowing that it's always, always there. And sometimes when you need those reminders, then it's like, okay, I'm here.
Yeah. I was having dinner with a friend in an outdoor area, and she and I were just chit-chatting on a bench, and this little girl like charges almost between my legs to get in. I'm like, oh my gosh, let me move over for her. And her dad comes running. He's like, I'm really sorry, but she saw a ladybug and had to reach for it. And my friend's like, of course, like, this is just getting ridiculous.
Like, you can't even make this up. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That's the thing. And that's why I say, like, I used to not be about signs, but it's almost like you said, I can't make it up. And it's like so frequent that I'm like, okay. Like, I'll believe you. You know, like, I hear you.
Oh, I love that. Wow. So do you, I know that you feel really connected to Eugene still. So are there any other ways that you practice or stay connected, or?
I think it's just, I try not to hold on to just the ladybug, right? But there are little moments where sometimes if I feel like I'm forcing things, or where I feel kind of like I'm muddling through something, and then something happens that is so Eugene, then it's like, oh my, it's like I almost collapse on my chair and kind of chuckle like, oh, okay, touche, you know, like I hear you, I got you. Yeah.
Wow.
And very strange, because I used to have a dream about Eugene like every single month for a very long time. Very, very long time. And sometimes it was just very comforting to feel that connection. I'm sure for some people, I mean, a lot of people with the right intentions may give their advice, right? Like, they were like, you should move from where you live because you're going to see Eugene everywhere. And I'm like, I'm going to see Eugene everywhere regardless of where I live. Like, why would I cause more change in my family's life by moving somewhere else when I'm perfectly happy in the home that I'm in now? Right. Mm-hmm. But that was their way of trying to offer help, or maybe they thought that was their way of trying to protect me from further grief. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it's just, I think for me, it was like, nope, I'm going to stay put, and I'm not going to run away from things. And I'm going to just do the best I can with my kids and love them as much as I can and help them feel loved as much as I can. But what I did do intentionally is to, because I was so frail, I felt like I did not have the capacity to handle any negative energy. So it's almost like I was living in COVID times before COVID even happened in my home with the kids. And I was very, very intentional about who I invite into our space. But also knowing that I have to expand my space with, it can't be just us three, because then I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to end up living in a silo, and that's not what I want. So I was very intentional about what uncles and aunties I invite into my kids' lives and build that community so that they always feel loved and they always know that somebody will show up for them.
Wow.
And in that support group, one of the ladies there said, God will bring fathers to the fatherless. And at the time, I didn't really understand what that meant. But sure enough, like, we have uncles showing up saying, we're going to go buy a Christmas tree together. And, you know, it's like, that's what we did with Daddy. It's like, oh, Uncle Paul's going to do that for us this year. And so we would go get that tree, put it on top of our car, and then bring it home, and we would set it up together. And the year after, it was Uncle Chris who said, no, I'm going to buy that Christmas tree with you this year. And he would show up. And then during COVID, it was hard to schedule and to figure out, like, okay, how do we do this? And so Uncle Chris, he just bought and delivered an artificial tree for us. So now he's known as Christmas Tree Uncle Chris. You know, like, there are these moments where all these friends and uncles show up. And it's just, we're just so blessed. And it's just so beautiful to see how those people step up.
What a blessing. What a blessing.
And I think it's, you know, they say it takes a village, right? But I think it also takes initiative from those quote unquote villagers, because some people may have the best intentions and some people may think about us or others and their loved ones in their hearts all the time, right? But it's like, I want to encourage people to take action, you know, from that loving space and take initiative and actually do something, so that, especially for the kids, they can actually see it and feel it, as opposed to, oh, I know they love us. Really, how is that manifesting for them to see and feel?
Wow.
And it also teaches the kids that, like, this is what I should do as well for my friends as I grow up. We show up for each other.
How, like, what a blessing that these people in your life came in, and obviously Eugene will never be replaced, but can help fill in some of the gaps with the love that he would want passed on to his children. So yeah, that brings up something even for me. I like how you talked about the being intentional about your space and who you invited in. When my little guy was 5.5 months old, he needed a major surgery. And so I just couldn't stop envisioning the surgeon. It's totally okay. I know my little guy finally left the room. I can cut this out. He finally left the room after making all the noise and banging and coloring. I'm like, seriously, you never do this?
Mom life, right?
Totally.
I love it. Read that for anything.
Yeah, I know. He's crawling around, taking the markers. He's downstairs now playing piano. I'm like, hopefully it's not picking up, but whatever. It'll add to the add to it. Yeah, but like I was saying, when my little guy was 5.5 months old, he needed a major surgery and he had to be cut from ear to ear and his skull had to be removed. And this is after, like, going through my multiple miscarriages. So finally, I have this beautiful boy. Then the next part of my story is the day after he was born, I found out that he needed this, might need this surgery, which he did. And so when you talk about, like, really thinking about your space and who is in it and the energy, when I went to get healing done, because I couldn't get the image out of my mind of the surgeon walking into the room with the look on their face. And I'm like, I can't be in this space before I take him in. And what it all boiled down to, which I had no idea at the time, but through this healing session, was she said to me, there's someone in your family, and I knew who it was, that as we kind of talked about it, but if they are not bringing a good vibration and a good energy to that hospital on the day that he's having the surgery, then I had to tell them they need to leave. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that seemed so hard for me, a family member that wanted to be there. But I knew, and just the way that like I am, that absolutely no negative energy, nothing will be in this space as my child is in there. Absolutely no, no way possible. So I had to come to terms that if that was the case on that day, then I would have to actually speak up and do something really hard because it was somebody in my family. But I love how you've created that space, you know, initially where it was the three of you, and then it's kind of opening and opening because your village has arrived and are there for you. And I think looking in now, I can just imagine like the big gigantic smile on Eugene's face as he's like looking down and seeing what a blessing that you have all of these people in your life and in your space, even though he's not here in physically here, but here just kind of watching over and sending all these little signs and these ladybugs and love. So what do you think that he would say or would be feeling right now as he looks down on the life that you are creating for yourself? Because he just loved you so deeply and all the things that he would do for you and show for you and also for your kids. What do you think that he would be feeling or wanting to say to you?
Wow, I never thought about it that way, but you're making me realize that he would probably be proud of me. He would be proud of how our kids are growing. They're my kids, but like they're such beautiful, loving kids with such big hearts. And I think he'd be proud of me. And the thing is, like, I still hold him accountable because as he was passing, prior to that, he was saying, I know this is a tall order, but I promise that I'm going to be around until the kids are at least like high school or college. And I'm just like, okay, like, and as he was passing, I was telling him, you know, I know you promised me that, but it's okay. It's okay to go. And I'm not mad at you, and you're not breaking a promise. And I told him I will take care of him, both our kids down here, but you take care of them from up there. And I kept saying, it's okay. And then I love you. And I know this sounds crazy, but I felt him leave. Like I knew the exact moment when he left. To the point where when we had visitors, in my mind, I'm like, you guys are too late, man. Like, he's gone. But it's like, I'm not going to burst your bubble because you can have your moment here. But, like, I physically felt him leave. And, like, kind of, I looked around the room to be like, did everybody else feel that? But so even now, like, before we go to sleep, we say goodnight. And I remind the kids, like, okay, as we're sleeping or when you're at school, when mommy's not here, that's when, you know, daddy's watching over you. So you can look up or you can talk to God and then say, God, daddy, I know you guys are hanging out right now. Like, can you help me with this or watch over me with this or whatever? I remember when Elijah was little, like, it was something as simple as like, daddy, I ate my broccoli today, you know, like... And we would still have that open conversation. And now whenever something comes about where it reminds me of Eugene, then I'll tell the kids like, oh, daddy actually used to go golfing here all the time with Uncle So-and-so. Or I'll tell them about a funny story that happened just so that like they can still get to know him, mm-hmm. understand a little bit more. Yeah. What I do feel like is a big shame though, is that like, they'll never get to see what kind of husband he was because he would have been such a great role model for them. right? For my daughter to see, oh, this is how a husband treats a wife, right? And or for my son to understand, like, oh, this is how you show love to your loved ones, in that male figure, right? So that's the only thing I'm like, oh, what a shame that they won't be able to see that. But if you think about it, like, love is just a universal language. You know, there's feminine and masculine energy in both genders. And as long as my kids feel that love and know how to express that love, like, I hope that it'll still translate for them in their own relationships as they.
Oh my gosh, that just is like straight to the heart. And something that you said about seeing, have your children see the love for you. But as you talked about your children earlier, one thing that I heard a long time ago, I don't know, people have said this, it's like you always want to look to see how a man treats his mother, because that is such an indication of how he will treat you or his wife. So your little one, even though he might not like see your husband doing the things, it sounds like his heart, the heart that he has, is like passed down from Eugene. So the way that he is in his heart and treating you, although he might not directly see it, it's like he's still living that and showing you that love. So,
That's so true because I've been home for the past 2 weeks because I had surgery. And my son Elijah, he's 10 now. He's like, Mommy, what do you do when we're at school? Right. And I was like, well, and I was kind of trying to tell him, like, I'm trying to recover and maybe I'll read a book or journal or watch some TV. He's like, oh, okay, because I was worried that you will feel lonely without us here. And he's like, you know, I'm always here for you. Right. And I'm just like, my elementary school, you know, like he's so young, but still, like, he has so much love. Yeah.
that's beautiful. Okay, lastly, before we say goodbye, I just want to ask, is there anything that you maybe haven't allowed yourself to do or feel or experience or allow into your life that you want to invite in now for yourself that you've kind of put on hold or maybe not even really thought about that? You're thinking, okay, now is a time that I allow myself to.
Yeah, I think I want to be a bit more carefree, just play with my kids while they're still young, but also let my inner child play a little bit. I often think to myself, like, what kind of life would Eugene have wanted for you to live? Right, as opposed to just doing all the practical stuff, like how we're conditioned to do, you know, be responsible and pay those bills and work, 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 work. It's like, well, life is not just about that. So I'm trying to infuse more time with the kids of like traveling and sometimes traveling with other friends, but also traveling with just the three of us. And I did that just one time last summer, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. There's something about just the three of us doing something so that we don't have to cater towards, oh, but so and so wants to do this, so let's go do that. And it's just like, it was just the three of us. It's like, we want to stay in the hotel. Okay, we'll stay in the hotel for a little bit longer. You want to go to the pool? Let's do that. And I saw the way in which my kids were interacting with each other and just like bonding even more. And I'm like, okay, I want to intentionally carve out moments for just the three of us to do that.
And then you can leave the laundry at home, the dusting at home, the
Right.
cleaning at home. It's like when you leave your physical space and go somewhere else, the things that we just naturally do and our habits and the way that we go about our day, it's like, well, they're not there. So you can actually really just be playful or go with the flow or do what you want. And I love that you bring that up, just the three of you at times, because then you don't have to worry about anybody else. And you can just really focus on what you want to do and be spontaneous and change your mind and not be locked into anything and just enjoy this time together.
Yeah, because it's a different type of energy. You know, when we're with our family, friends, it's fun, right? But then the boys will go out and play and do their own thing, and the girls will play, and then the grown-ups will maybe gather. And that's fun in itself. But then when it was just the three of us, there was like a beautiful intimacy and so much fun, you know? And it was just like, we can just put all of our priorities down and just focus on what the three of us want to do. And I definitely think I need to do more of that.
Well, I'm excited to hear about all of these new adventures that you and your little family go on. I guess, so where can everybody find this beautiful, I'm not even just saying this alphabet book. Like, I learned so much from it. I loved it. We found the ladybug on each page. If anybody wants to grab a copy, where can they find that or connect with you or say hi?
So they can find it on Amazon right now. If they just type in, you know, they can even type in my name, Cecilia Son, Fire Department Book, or they can type in the actual title, Eli and Izzy's Fire Department Alphabet Book. I'm not too involved in social media, but I do have an Instagram at Eli_and_Izzy. But yeah, I think your community is just so loving, and I would be happy to hear from them. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. I feel like I've got a really good sense of who Eugene is. And I think now, even hearing your story, that every time I see a ladybug, I'll probably think of him also, and you, and just how magical that is when we open up and allow for the things to come through that we just can't really explain in words, that, you know, our loved ones, even though they might not be here in body, they're here in spirit and watching over. So thank you for sharing your story. And I just loved chatting with you today.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of All Things Relatable. If you know someone that would relate to this episode and get value from it, please pass it along. Also, if this episode resonated with you, I would love for you to rate, review, and subscribe.